And he sat down one day at the table with me and he sat back in the chair and he said, Eileen, do you know how much business you did last year? I said, no. And he said, $200,000. Like, wow, I didn't even know that. And so that's the only moment that I have a memory of like, wow, that's kind of amazing. And it's funny because that was a pretty early moment. That was like the second year in business or something, you know? So it wasn't later when it was like, you know, all these stores or anything like that. I remember being like, going to like department store events and things like that and being shocked that all these people would show up for these little fashion shows that we would do. I'd be like, what are these people?
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. I loved talking to Eileen Fisher. I expected, let's just say, something completely different from a famous big-name designer. But Eileen, she happened to be one of the most down-to-earth and humble guests I have ever interviewed for How Success Happens. It was totally inspiring. See, Eileen is the founder and co-CEO of Eileen Fisher, the design company known for creating simple, timeless garments. And today, she is heavily involved, especially as the pandemic has changed a lot of things with her business. Her brands are sold at 66 Eileen Fisher stores and over 300 department and specialty stores across the US, UK, and Canada. She has an amazing story from completely small-time startup to a major fashion brand. I love talking to Eileen, so modest and so different from what I expected. Mostly, I loved how her story was one of a gritty start, self-funded and built completely from the ground up. So I had to start by asking her how it all began.
Oh, goodness. Yeah. It's always a question of how far back to go. sometimes I think of it, you know, the first inspiration for the actual business came on a trip to Japan. But I think that ideas were already in my mind. But if I start there, I was inspired by the Japanese aesthetic, by the kimono, the whole idea that one shape was the only shape they wore in Japan for over 1,000 years. And timeless. I hated to throw things away. And I tell the story, my mother grew up during the Depression and she had this big chest in the closet where she saved every scrap of fabric and made quilts out of them, things like that. And so, you know, I was kind of ingrained with the idea of how precious fabric is and I hated to throw things away and cleaning my closets. Well, that's a different story, but that means throwing away. So I like to do that. So I think seeing the kimono kind of triggered something in me. I was a designer already. I was doing graphic design at the time and had been doing some interior design. So it's sort of how I thought. And I started to kind of see pictures of these kind of simple shapes. And I also in Japan saw the little cropped pants, the little flood pants that they wear in the rice paddies and stuff. And I was just very intrigued by those shapes, you know, the kimono shape and the simple pant, just kind of simple aesthetic and that idea of timeless. And so that's, I guess that's kind of where it came from. Sometimes I also say I wore a uniform when I was in school for 12 years, which is why I still hate the color burgundy, but we won't go there. but I hated wearing a uniform, but at the same time, it was so simple. You just got up and you were ready to go in 5 minutes. So when I came to New York and I was trying to be a designer and, you know, it was so complicated to get dressed and to like sort of look the part, feel like I had the right things on that expressed me, and shopping would make me feel crazy and trying all these different shapes and fabrics and what goes together and how does it work? You know, I just feel kind of sick. So I guess I just wanted to make it easier. I wanted to make it easier for myself. I wanted to make it easier for women to get dressed, to not have to spend so much time shopping and fussing and, you know, just be able to find simple things that you love that work together. I talk about my line as a system. And so people fall in love with certain pieces. They work with other pieces. They build a wardrobe. They don't have to throw things away. So kind of in the concept is an idea about no waste and sustainability, sort of built into the core idea.
Which is interesting, you know, and we'll get into the, you were way ahead, it seems like, of everyone regarding sustainability. And now maybe I get it a little bit better because I also had a father who grew up in the Depression, and everything we went through or talked about, he would revert back to that. And, you know, just, he said he grew up at a time, they even say, he grew up in the Bronx, they saved the dirt was his famous line.
Oh, my mother did too, for sure. Yeah.
And it's kind of funny, but it makes so much sense now with your business. But you have this big idea at the time, you're a designer, and it comes to you, you're on this trip to Japan. Now, yeah. Starting a business, how does, it's easy to have the idea, but then you come back and you actually do it.
Yeah. Well, not immediately. It sort of took me about 5 years from the time the first idea landed in my mind. But I kept kind of seeing pictures, seeing shapes, kind of almost like I was building the idea in my own mind somehow. And I would talk about it with friends. And I lived in Tribeca at the time. And I had artist friends and designer friends. And, you know, I would just talk about my idea. And I got a lot of encouragement, like, you should do that. You should do that. And somehow I had a friend who showed jewelry at the boutique show. So he said, come on to the boutique show, take a look. And, you know, maybe you'll get an idea or something related to your picture. So sure enough, I went to the boutique show, and I just remember walking through there and seeing all these small designers and different vendors, people selling different kinds of things. And I remember thinking, oh, I could do this. I could picture doing this. It had seemed really hard when I thought about designing this line and doing what some of my friends did. They would wait in line at Henri Bendel's or Bloomingdale's. And, you know, then the buyer would just like look at their stuff and go, nope. Thanks. Not even tell you why. Just nope, not interested. And not what we're looking for. Maybe they'd say nice, but not what we need now. So I wasn't confident enough. And I didn't feel like people would understand or I could explain it. You know, words were not my gift, you know.
Did that hold you back? The fear of rejection?
Oh, God. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. I was not a confident person. And Yeah. I mean, sometimes I say I make comfortable clothes because I'm an uncomfortable person.
I love that. That should be your tagline.
My clothes have to be really super comfortable, you know, because I don't want anything that adds to my total discomfort in life. Yeah. But anyway, so there I was at the boutique show, and it was, I could see that I could hang my clothes there and I could sell the clothes. I could imagine people could get the idea. I think I felt like you had to see the whole idea. You couldn't just see a garment or two. You know, you really had to understand it in it's sort of a concept. So that's what I did. I remember going home and saying, I remember my friend, the jewelry designer, you know, actually he was a sculptor, you know, saying he had a booth in the back. He had like one wall, like a tiny wall at the boutique show way in the back. And the cost of that one wall was like $350. And the whole booth was like $1,200 or something right. Like that. So he said, maybe you just want to take that, my wall, because I can't, you know, he wasn't able to produce. He would get orders, but he wasn't able to meet the orders that he got from the show. So he just sort of decided he didn't want to do it. So I thought, oh, he said, yeah, for $350, maybe you could start. And I'm like, wow. I remember looking at my bank account that day and going like, wow, I have $350 in my bank account. Okay, why not? I don't know what I thought I was going to eat the next day or how I thought I was going to pay my rent. But I was still doing freelance work and stuff, so I wasn't desperate. But it was kind of like, this is it. Give it a shot. And I had no clothes. I didn't have anything to show. So I just remember I had to figure out how to get fabric, hire a pattern maker, get someone to make my samples, you know. But the pictures just kept coming. They were pretty clear in my mind, the shapes and finding the right fabric and figuring out how to make those first samples. That was a little complicated, but I didn't have a lot of time. So I don't know. Maybe I had 6 weeks or something to
wow.
make it happen.
So in 6 weeks, which is so great because it's, you realize at that point, you know what? I could do this. I could sell here. I could put this up. These visions keep coming to you. You get the offer, $350. Right. It's 6 weeks. So what happens then?
Yeah. Again, talking to friends, and somebody said, you know, hey, I know a sewer. I know she makes patterns. Maybe she'll come and help you. And sure enough, she agreed to work for me and I could pay her later. She said, I'll think of it as money in the bank. I'll come a couple evenings a week and try to help you out. And she did. And she told me where to go to buy fabric. And I stumbled around and found the fabric I wanted to use. And I don't even know. I look back and think, I don't even know how that worked. I don't even know. I ended up getting, you know, a small group of orders. It was a good thing because if I'd gotten any more, I wouldn't have been able to produce it because the manufacturer only had like a few bolts of this fabric. You know, they didn't really have all of the fabric. I didn't know that I couldn't just order it and I wasn't going to be able to order 500 yards or 1,000 yards of each color. I went back there and pretty much took everything they had. They had, I don't know, I can't remember how many bolts of fabric it was, but just remember they were delivered to my house and I was kind of shocked, my loft in Tribeca. And I had to carry the bolts of fabric up five flights, 83 steps. I just remember counting the steps back and forth with my boxes and my bolts of fabric. It's crazy. Anyway, so somehow it worked. It was sort of magical that, I mean, it was a lot of hard work, but it was sort of one day at a time, you know, from there. Once the thing was live, it was kind of like, even right then in the very beginning, I kind of knew I had a business just because people were interested. They were interested in the idea. They sat and talked with me. I remember the first day of the boutique show, I didn't even put prices on the clothes. I don't know what I was thinking.
It was also new, right? You're just happy to be there or excited to be there. It's amazing. So
actually, I was terrified. I don't even know. I was so terrified I couldn't speak the first day. I was like, people would come around and say, oh, and how much? And what are the style numbers? I'm like, style. Oh, I have to come up with style numbers. They're asking me for style numbers. I don't know.
I love it.
But everybody was so helpful. People like to help you.
And being terrified, because there's been so many businesses. And I just think of you specifically now while we're talking. I mean, your brand has become iconic, let's say, in the fashion world. And
that's funny.
And it really has. And you go back to this day when you're putting out, kind of hanging your first shingle, and you're terrified. What was that feeling like?
It was kind of like that kind of dissociation when you kind of, it's like you're not grounded in your body or something. You're just kind of floating around, you know, it's like that.
It's amazing because there are so many people who want to start businesses that can never get over that feeling of being terrified. And I always think to myself, like, how many incredible businesses, brands, companies were never built, right?
Like, because people's fear.
Because they had this fear of just going out there. And it's so great that you were able to overcome that. Or just, you know, what was it that made you, was it something, was it those visions that you were seeing? Or was it just like, I have to do this, that just made you go through with it?
That's a really good question. I'm definitely driven by the visions. If when I see the picture, I feel like confident to go there. Like I'm not confident in myself as a human or in my ability to articulate things, but I'm confident in the pictures. That's kind of what drives me. Even now, you know, it's like I walk into the space and I sort of see certain pictures and I see that over there and like, oh, that sparks me, that I see that picture. I can imagine that. That's what drives me. You know, that's, you know, and I'm sure it's different for everyone, but for me, it's like, I think in pictures, I see pictures, you know?
Yeah.
And even now, very much so, like we're in the midst of moving out of New York. And it's just, I saw the picture of everyone coming back home to Irvington, to the waterfront. And, you know, it's just feeling so exciting to be there and creative, like the early days again, and just people having fun and getting really excited about the clothes. And I don't know, it's just, I saw the picture. I saw the picture of people coming back. And you know, so that's what's driving me. Like, that's the right decision. I see the picture.
And was that pulling out now? I mean, this is a obviously timely topic. Living in New York City myself, starting a business now in New York City, although virtual. How did that decision come about? I know you had a vision, but to pull out of New York City and move to Irvington, was this being considered before COVID? Or was this just something that happened?
No. We were considering giving up some of our space in New York because we had four floors in Fifth Avenue on 18th Street. And we were looking at maybe taking one less floor, or, you know, just because we saw our wholesale business shifting, we were leaning more into digital and our own direct-to-consumer business. And so we were less, we didn't need as much space and didn't need as much focus in that direction. But we were never thinking of moving out of New York. So many of our people live in New York and live in Brooklyn and live in New Jersey. So that didn't even cross our minds until COVID happened. And then it was kind of like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? The buyers can't come to New York. They can't travel. We can't even get into the office. We've got, you know, our product development team here in Irvington and people are coming here. Designers are coming here. And all of a sudden it just like, and we're working online. It just seemed like, oh, and we created a virtual showroom to, you know, so the buyers could see online. And all of a sudden it seemed like, well, people were sort of enjoying working partially from home and partially at the office. And the virtual showroom was working. So we're kind of like, wow, maybe we don't need all that space. And we have a big space in Irvington. So we had kind of partially moved out. And I mean, half of our people were between New York and Irvington, different depending on the work they were doing. So there were a lot of empty spaces in Irvington because, but it, you know, it's just big, nice kind of warehouse type space. So this room, there's plenty, actually much more beautiful than a warehouse, but it was originally a warehouse. Anyway, so that's sort of, it happened very naturally. And we're still in the midst of kind of finishing it up, but it's, you know, very, very natural transition. I'm sure we have to think how it all works for all of our people. And that's what we're thinking about now, where the teams go, how often they come here, how that works. We have our little factory here. And so it's really sweet. And we're going to build a like a showroom here. So sometimes when the buyers want to come and they can see our where we do our recycling, our recycle center and our tiny factory. So, you know, they can get a taste of that and also see the current line if they want to occasionally come, but they can also work the line online. So they don't have to. Just more like a fun.
I love, it's really funny. As you know, I grew up in Westchester, but when the pandemic hit for that first couple of weeks, when we were in our apartment here in New York, all crammed, we actually, funny enough, drove up to Irvington to potentially look at houses that we were going to, we ended up saying, okay, we're going to stay in New York City. But it's really funny just to think, because Irvington is I've always loved it, beautiful river town. And I'm sure your employees and people who are going to come visit you will probably fall in love with it as well.
Sweet place.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite towns by far. I love all the river towns.
They're nice. Yeah, I like them too.
But I want to go back to that first show, the boutique. Okay, and I know you probably hate going back, but...
I know, I've said, told the story, I have to like record it. Just listen to the other one.
Yes, but it's very interesting, especially for our audience, because our audience sometimes sees Eileen Fisher and they see, and I do it myself, even as an entrepreneur, and you don't realize like you had to go through some of the hardest times and like carrying the boxes up your stairwell in Tribeca. So when you, after that first day where you were terrified and, but you started talking to people, how then did you plan or take the business onto like the next stage?
Plan is a word that doesn't go well with me.
I see. Whatever your
others around me do plan. So that's important to note. They would be not happy if I said we don't plan, but we do. No, I think that really it was, you know, just looking at it by day, trying to see. I had to look forward to once the next show moment, boutique show, or I did the coterie in those days. And, you know, then, so I had a deadline that I had to have my new line ready for. So I would plan that. And then I had to actually produce the product that was ordered.
Yeah.
So, you know, meet those deadlines. So there was a lot of planning involved in how do I get the money to produce the first grouping and how do I ship it? How do I do this? You know, how do I produce it? And then it just kind of went from, in the early days, it was like sort of one show to the next, sort of one group of orders to the next group of orders and like produce it and create the next grouping and produce that and create the next line like that. And so it just kind of kept going. And I think it kind of, it's quite organic in the way it happened in the early days. I remember getting a few sales reps, people that came and saw the line at the boutique show, and then they wanted to sell it in Chicago or in Boston or Texas and places like that. And so that also opened up new markets for me and just sort of, again, grew organically. I opened a tiny store on East 9th Street, and that was great because it was real immediate connection to the customer, which I loved, just stopping by on my way home and listening to her and what she liked and what worked. And, you know, that was fun. And so then it was sort of not terribly strategic, you know, more organic in the way things worked. Like, what do I need now? What's the next person I need now? Sort of one person at a time, you know, one and more account, another, just one day at a time. That's a weird way to say it, because it was more than a day. And we did, you know, when it came to finances, we did have to plan. So, you know, I did have accountants help me lay out the cash flow. And I was like, wow, that's so interesting. So I'd be borrowing money because I would think, well, if I have $100,000 of orders, how much money is it going to take me to produce $100,000 of orders? Well, if I can flow it in two deliveries, I can have $20,000 and I can start to turn that money and use some of it and, you know, all of that. And, you know, just had to plan how much money I needed. And I remember in the early days, just like that I'd borrowed probably $20,000 from family and friends, and which was a huge chunk to me. And I remember thinking, well, I'll just turn, you know, the get the $40,000 or $50,000 of orders, and then I can return the money. But getting accountants to help me, they said, you're never going to be able to return this money, because then, especially if you're successful, because the next season you're going to sell more, and then you're going to need more money rather than be able to return their money. Then I started to feel really bad, like, oh no, how do I do this? Because I want to return the money to the people I'm borrowing it from. So that became time that I needed to get like a bank loan. And even before that, I was getting lines of credit from the fabric manufacturers, and even the sewers would give me 30 days to pay, you know, things like that. And that helped. I charged COD in the early days.
Yeah.
Then there was sort of another step. I moved from sort of just mostly specialty stores and boutiques to into selling. Well, when I opened my own store on 9th Street, then I kind of started liking retail. There was something intriguing about it. And so I ended up opening a store on Madison Avenue in Midtown. That was my ex-husband. He had a couple of stores up north. And so when we got together, he was like, retail, you should do more retail. Yeah, I guess so, you know. And then we found this location and it's still there, 53rd and Madison Avenue, tiny store. And, you know, I thought, wow, that's a risk, but could be fun. So, you know, we opened, it was immediate success. And once we did that, department stores found us. I think it might've been, I can't remember which was the first one. Was it Bloomingdale's or Saks? It was Bloomingdale's. Yes. It sold some small orders to Saks and Macy's, but Bloomingdale's, they saw the store and they were like, they had seen the line several times and just didn't buy it. They said, then what they said when they saw the store is like, they don't understand, but people are standing there buying stacks of clothes. So I must be doing something right. You know, they didn't quite understand my clothes. They were just so simple, you know? And they said, well, what we decided is we have to have a department for you. You can't just put a rack of your clothes somewhere. They'll look like nothing because they don't look like anything on the hanger, you know? So they opened a department and we started doing business and more business with department stores. And it just sort of grew from there. And then we decided to keep opening more stores. And it was kind of one at a time, two at a time, four at a time, you know, one wouldn't work, you'd have to close it. And then you'd open four more, or it was like that kind of thing. It just kept going. And yeah, so that was the business part.
I like it. And I know you're such a creative person and you're a designer and you make it sad.
I don't know if I'm so creative. I only have a few ideas. I keep just repeating the same.
Well, whatever they are, they're definitely working. But I would say, and how you express this, you're like, you know, and I love it, you know, take one day, it's a process you're building, but you sound so calm. And was that how you were like when you were going through this? Or were you stressing like, I got to get a bank loan?
You know, that's so interesting. I was excited by it, and I was enlivened by it. You know, in a way, it's sort of mirroring this current moment in time. Like, this is a really terrifying time again. You know, this moment of COVID, but what happens to me is I think like I'm a problem solver, so I just love problems. Oh, we got this bunch of orders. How do I get the money? How do I produce this? Where do I do it? How does this work? You know, same thing with sustainability. I just love the problem of sustainability. How do we fix this? How can we do this? What do we need to do? I don't know. I wanted to be a math major when I went to college, you know, so I think that it's the math major in me that likes to solve things. It gets kind of lit up by that. So,
well, the good thing is you've been able to do a lot of math, I am sure, with all those stores and figuring out numbers. And it's funny how maybe you didn't need to be a math major to actually do math, which is kind of cool. So tell me then, was there a time where you just said to yourself, like, wow, look what I've built or have built with others? Because
always, never alone.
Well, right? I knew you were going to say that. And so I didn't want to, whenever I asked like a nice person, which you certainly come across and certainly grounded and have gratitude, you know, I know they'll always mention that. But for you, was there a moment that you were like, wow, like, look what's become of this little first event I did?
The only moment that's standing out for me when you say that, it was this funny moment. It wasn't even me. It was my dad. And I remember my dad was an accountant, you know, so he wanted to come and help me in New York. And I just remember he wanted to review my books, make sure people were paying me and, you know, that just look at how I was making the business work. And he was with this little pencil. He loved the pencil. Perfect writing numbers. And he was making all these spreadsheets. And he sat down one day at the table with me and he sat back in the chair and he said, Eileen, do you know how much business you did last year? I said, no. And he said, $200,000. I'm like, wow, I didn't even know that. And so that's the only moment that I have a memory of like, wow, that's kind of amazing. And it's funny because that was a pretty early moment. That was like the second year in business or something, you know? So it wasn't later when it was like all these stores or anything like that. I remember being like going to like department store events and things like that and being shocked that all these people would show up for these little fashion shows that we would do. I'd be like, where are these people? Where did they come from? You know? Or like one day going to my warehouse out in New Jersey, because there was a moment we operated here in Irvington for years. We were in the city and then moved up here. And we had the shipping and, you know, the design studio and shipping and everything here in Irvington. And then it got too big. And so we moved out to a warehouse in Secaucus. And we just kept growing the warehouse. And I went out there one day and I was just blown away by the size of the space and all of the clothes. And I just didn't have that connection and understanding of how much it really was, you know. It's funny.
It's super interesting. You know, how does it also feel? I've always wanted to ask this of a famous designer, like, you're Eileen Fisher, and then there's Eileen Fisher, the brand, right? Like, is it interesting when people come to you and they're like, what, you're Eileen? Like, do they, you know, I don't know, when you're paying for dinner and, you know, or something along those lines, or how does that feel?
It's funny, you know, my favorite is when they'll say to me, like, I'll give my American Express card in a hotel or something, and somebody will say, did you know there's a famous designer, the same name as you? And I'll go like, right, I know. And they'll go, of course you know, of course you know. It's your name. Of course, you know. But often I won't tell them because I think they just don't think I could be that person. You know, it's just a funny thing. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
You know, it's interesting.
I'm too ordinary to be that fashion famous, whatever people think it is.
You know? I love, you know, how grounded you are. And it's such
I don't know if that's actually true either, but I like that.
You come across very grounded and very... There's just a way about you where, especially you think of these famous designers and they want their name on late, you know, like, and it's just a whole different world. And it's so satisfying to be talking to you and just you telling me that story where you don't even correct them or tell them. And then you're shocked they're even asking. And that's super cool. I mean, to me, I love that. And I wanted to get into something else that has been...
I want to say one thing about that is I never really wanted to call it Eileen Fisher. I searched because I felt like it was a concept that wasn't about me, because I don't like thinking about that women would wear my clothes. I want these clothes to be help them to kind of shine through, not to overtake them. So I don't think of it as, I think of kind of the, it's more of a concept. Like I think like Bauhaus design is like a concept rather than it's so much a person's name. I mean, somebody has to start it and someone has to, it has to, the sort of picture came through me, but I don't feel like I own it. I feel like I'm always undesigning clothes and, you know, just simplifying things. So it feels very not so much about me. But I couldn't come up with a name fast enough that weekend that I was thinking about what to call it before that boutique show. And then once it started to roll, it seemed to have my name on it.
Yeah, the rest is history, which is great. Now, you were ahead of your time, I think, in certain areas, at least when I look at the years, and one is in terms of sustainability. And also, I know you had alluded to earlier from your mom and Great Depression, and it kind of makes sense saving, but here you are in a business that, you know, you want someone to buy the new line, right? The next year, right, and then the new line after that. But you, it sounds like, took kind of a different path and really got behind some initiatives around sustainability. Yeah. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. Well, I think there's different parts to it. First of all, just inherent in the concept that I talked about is sort of timeless and kind of conscious consumerism and buying quality and simple things that work over time. There's that. But there's also the idea of the environment. Like when I first started, it was all about natural materials because I just love natural fibers. And I felt like that was a sustainable concept that they break down in the environment, unlike the synthetics, that's what ends up in the ocean and things like that. But I didn't understand early on that actually conventional cotton and can be quite damaging, using a lot of water, polluting the water, nasty chemistry in the process of finishing and things like that. And so it was years later, I hired a head of social consciousness 25 years ago.
Yeah, that was ahead of your time.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, us and maybe Patagonia, they might have beat us.
Maybe. I doubt it even, but anyway.
I don't know. I think maybe, but we've worked hand in hand with them on a lot of things. So I think the first work that she brought to our awareness was the idea of materials, you know, that we're a material. Our product is about materials. We were asking about planned obsolescence in fashion. I didn't quite answer that question. But the sustainability piece, so starting with materials, that what we found out and what she made us aware of is that 50% of our impact is just from the raw materials that we use. And then another 25% is from the processing, you know, the chemistry and the dyeing and all of that. So we started to really put our attention many years ago towards more sustainable materials. So it was a number of years ago, we committed to like all organic cotton, all organic linen, and then, you know, lots of other metrics that we wanted to measure: water use, energy use, chemistry, all of those things. And she worked hard and created a team and kind of built, like embedded the kind of whole philosophy of how to work and how to think about sustainable materials right into the design process and everything. So that's very much a part of who we are, all the way down to our program to take our clothes back. It's called Renew. So we've been doing that for many years now, where our customers return their clothes. So it's part of kind of a circular.
How does that work? Idea. How does that work? What happens when they return their
clothes? Yeah. So the customers get $5 for every garment they return, so they can use it towards purchase of new clothes. So that's one way they buy more, you know, but they bring their things back. So we guarantee that they don't end up in the landfill. And we have two recycle stores, but we resell those products through our company stores and several of other stores. And then what we can't sell, maybe it's too damaged or, you know, something like that, we remake in our tiny factory. So that's what I was telling you about earlier. So that's kind of the circular piece. And we're exploring lots of ideas. We found this felt loom. We have these big felt loom machines, and we're making bags and home furnishings and lots of amazing things. So
very cool.
Yeah. So that's part of the circular story.
More from our guest, but first, a word from our sponsors.
Okay, Thanksgiving and Black Friday may definitely look a little different this year, but there's still a lot to be thankful for. like being able to find the right people for your team when the holiday rush has you ramping up your small business needs. So when you're ready to make that next hire, LinkedIn Jobs can help by matching your role with qualified candidates so you can find the right person for your business fast. As I've said, I love LinkedIn. I've been an active member since 2004. And now LinkedIn is an active community of professionals with more than 706 million members worldwide. And getting started now is easier than ever with new features to help you find qualified candidates quickly. And now you can even do this all from your mobile device, no matter where the day takes you. That's how LinkedIn Jobs can help you hire the right person faster. When your business is ready to make that next hire, find the right person with LinkedIn Jobs. You can pay what you want and get the first $50 off. All you have to do is visit linkedin.com/HSH. Again, that's linkedin.com/HSH to get $50 off your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
And our next sponsor.
Work-life balance looks very different in 2020, and there are new challenges to your workday. Keeping yourself mentally healthy has never been more important, but if you're feeling stretched thin, you may need some help. With Calm for Business, companies can partner with the number one mental fitness app to provide support and tools for their employees. Calm has a library of content specifically designed to help work teams stress less, sleep better, and build mental resilience. Millions of employees at over 600 companies like Lincoln and Universal Studios are using Calm for Business. And right now, Calm is offering a free well-being guide and a free demo when you go to calm.com/HSH. And if Calm for Business is right for your team, they are also offering a free month of your first year when you go to calm.com/HSH. That's a free month of unlimited access when you go to calm.com/HSH. Get started today at calm.com/HSH.
And we're back.
One of the questions I had was, I wanted to know, and we had a guest on the show, Tim Brown, who started a brand called Allbirds.
Oh, yes.
There, you know, the story. Right. Yeah, and it reminds me, he had said, and I'm wondering if this happened to you, when he was going factory to factory, they looked at him, the people in the factory, and like, why do you want that material? Because it was a sustainable material. Like, we could do this 50% cheaper, but like, why are you the only manufacturer trying to do? Did that come up for you as well in your early days from maybe your accountants and number crunchers who were like, you know, this is great, but yeah. You know.
And actually, unlike Allbirds, because they really started with that concept, we had to kind of like retool. So we had products that were selling really well that then when we converted to organic cotton, it was like, oh no, are we going to be able to sell this for 15% more? Are we just going to take a 15% loss on all these products? You know, and so we tiptoed into it with splitting the cost with our customers, you know, just charging 7 or 8% more. And then over time, we built it into the cost because we wanted to make it, you know, something that we could just offer across the board. And we found that our customers were willing to pay. We told the story, we'd have it on the hang tag. And as long as they like the product, they, you know, we obviously don't want them to buy anything they don't like because it doesn't matter. If it's organic, if you don't like it, don't buy it. You know, if you're not going to wear it, because that's right. The first principle. You have to buy what you love and wear it a lot. So yes, in the early days, I remember, you know, like talking to manufacturers like, oh, I love this, but can you just take the polyester out or take this weird finish off of this, you know? And they thought it was odd, a lot of those things. And prices, most of our business people know that's just a part of us, you know? So that's you know, I guess you're, you know, if you're working here, it's just part of what we do. So I don't know what else to say about that. Did I answer your question there?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's interesting because now I know how much a part of it, but when you were first starting and you know, you're trying to run a business, it's a much harder decision.
Right. And change, retool, right?
Exactly. And, I'm curious also, just on another note, you're known for your comfort, right? And design. Has the pandemic, are people now looking, do you think, more for comfort? And like, has that helped your brand?
Yeah. Well, I think there's this sort of twofold thing that people are definitely looking for more comfort. And that is what we're selling. Our most comfortable fabrics. There's no doubt about it. Our sweaters, our comfortable pants. That's really what's selling. I think there's a sort of a twofold thing happening is that people, we also did a lot of clothes for like comfortable go to work clothes, comfortable dress up clothes. That's been harder. You know, even our comfortable jackets aren't selling as well, or our comfortable, like velvet dress, like the perfect thing for the holidays just to hang around the house. But so far, we're still waiting to see if they sell. So I think it's still, we're still really learning. Like we can see now what really sells in this time. And we've been sort of retooling and reorganizing. And as we're moving forward, more comfortable and, you know, less jackets, even though we only make really comfortable jackets, people just aren't wearing those things and buying those things, you know, so. Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. But hopefully, I don't know. So I think that to answer your question, it's kind of a double-edged sword. We are definitely selling more comfortable, but not necessarily selling more all around because we're losing this other piece of our business, which is a really important piece to us. So we'll see how it goes, I think.
Has there ever been anything like along the lines of what's happened with COVID and that's changed or you've had to change your business, like anything close? Mm-hmm.
No, nothing close. This has been dramatic. I mean, the changes we are. Honestly, I never worked so hard in my whole life, even in the very beginning, running up and down those stairs with bolts of fabric and things like that. This is really, really an intense moment. And it's also a very clarifying moment. Like it's forcing me and us to go, what is it that we really want to do here? What really matters? And we are just like, whoa, I said undesigning before, undesigning, simplifying, refocusing everything, reorganizing to produce less, to slow down the system. It's been very interesting. I'm just really rethinking the whole way we design. We really changed the way we're flowing product into stores. Moving into spring, we're like, we have much more sort of foundational product that we're just refreshing, not so much whole new monthly deliveries, changing everything, then it has to be marked down. We're really moving out of that cycle into, I think, a much more sustainable kind of business. So I think it's going to be really healthy business once we move through this time.
Yeah, I love when ingenuity comes out of these times, whether it's a financial crisis, right, or 9/11, and you make
opportunity,
and you make those changes. Anything from this time changed you as a leader or business person?
That's a good question. I definitely feel changed. I feel like I'm learning to speak. That's good. I'm learning to say no to things that I shouldn't be doing. Like we went along too much sometimes with department stores. We did good business with them, but then we started to lose our center. Now it's more like we're doing it this way. Come along. We can work together to make this work. But learning to say no, learning to be clear and to organize better. I'm sort of a disorganized person, along with being an uncomfortable person. I'm a disorganized person. Like really learning to organize the teams and the work differently. And yeah, I feel like a stronger person. I feel clearer. I feel like I'm facing my fear. Like we talked about that fear. Like I recognize that feeling. The fear has been really intense some days, like, whoa, I could lose this whole thing. I've worked too hard. We've all worked too hard. What do we need to do now? What do we need to do today? You know, so that's maybe more alert and actually more alive, more in touch with my fear, but also, hey, this weekend, more in touch with my joy. You know, like, that was a good weekend.
I love that. I love it because, you know, it's funny, just personally, I'm at a different stage with starting a business and there's a lot of fear and thinking, oh, someone like Eileen and her, that fear is kind of the fear of starting and grow, like, but then when you explain it and say like, you're even having that fear at this stage, it just makes you so human. And you realize that any business at any stage, there's always that fear. And I love how you said sometimes you're using it kind of to make you feel alive.
Right, right. No, that's exactly right. The thing that I do with fear is I have this little thing I say to myself, oh, it's like I name it. I go, oh, that's fear. That's fear. That's what this racing heart or this kind of anxious, this anxiety that comes in at times. And I just go, oh, there's the fear again. And just I ask myself, can I just be with this? And I just give myself a few minutes to sort of breathe and go, oh, there's the fear. And it just seems to kind of, it doesn't go away, but I feel like I can move through it.
Yeah.
And then I can act without, you know, like at the boutique show, I was just like, oh, my God, the whole day. Now I can go like, oh, that's what that is. Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Come back. You can do this.
Yeah.
You know, the pictures are biting me. And I think to stay in touch with my intuition and kind of the soul of this business that I'm trying to kind of recreate, reimagine into a new place.
I love that. And in the little time we have left, I do want to ask you, you guys, I believe, and I think it's an incredible achievement, very few businesses are a B Corp, right?
Oh, right.
Can you explain? Can you talk about what that is, what that means? Because I know it's a extremely difficult thing to be labeled.
Yeah. Well, B Corp's basically, it's a new business model. And the whole idea is you don't just measure profits, but you have to measure your environmental and your social impacts. And then you have to track it and, you know, meet certain standards in order to be a B Corp. So it's a fair amount of work, but it also helps hold us accountable. And I actually feel like it makes us better. And I really think that all businesses, I think this is the business model of the future. And whether it's B Corp or whether it's ESG standards, how we do it, I don't know. But B Corp's a wonderful model. And I think it helps us remember that we're not just doing this for the money. This isn't profits matter or you don't survive and then you can't do the good things. But you kind of have to do it all and that it's really possible to make a difference, do business for good while you're doing business. And that's actually an exciting possibility. It makes it all more meaningful, I think, for me and for all the others working. People work really hard. They try hard. It seems to matter more.
Yeah, it's something to definitely be proud of, especially nowadays and where we're going in this world. And I want to thank you. You know, I love your story. You never know what you're going to get on these interviews, but I love your story of you're just so human and your story from that little first show you did to where you are today. And I really take it. It seems like you're really that same person still growing, working on yourself. And that's awesome.
Awesome. That's all there is, really. Business is just another way to work on ourselves, isn't it? Yeah.
It's true.
To learn. To grow.
I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming on. And
my pleasure.
We'll talk again.
Good luck with your business.
Thank you so much. I got the fear. I'm labeling the fear now. It's just fear. And
you can
pass.
Do it. You got this.
All righty. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye. And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.